A drunk on a dark bench yelled something indecipherable at him. He lurched forward, then caught himself, and was thankful he had no gun. At that moment, he might have shot anything that moved. The cash got heavier with each block, but he made it without incident. He spilled the money onto his bed, locked every door possible, and took another route back to his car. During the fifth trip, he was confronted by a deranged old man who jumped from the shadows and demanded, "What the hell are you doing?" He was holding something dark in his hand. Ray assumed it was a weapon with which to slaughter him. "Get out of the way," he said as rudely as possible, but his mouth was dry. "You keep going back and forth," the old man yelled. He stank and his eyes were glowing like a demon. "Mind your own business." Ray had never stopped walking, and the old man was in front of him, bouncing along, the village idiot. "What's the problem?" came a clear, crisp voice from behind them. Ray stopped and a policeman ambled over, nightstick in hand. Ray was all smiles. "Evening, officer." He was breathing hard and his face was sweaty.
"He's up to something," the old man yelled. "Keeps going back and forth, back and forth. Goes that way, the bag is empty. Goes that way, the bag is full."
"Relax, Gilly," the cop said, and Ray took a deeper breath. He was horrified that someone had been watching, but relieved because that someone was of Gilly's ilk. Of all the characters on the mall, Ray had never seen this one. "What's in the bag?" the cop asked. It was a dumb question, far into foul territory, and for a split second, Ray, the law professor, considered a lecture on stops, searches, seizures, and permissible police questioning. He let it pass, though, and smoothly delivered the prepared line. "I played tennis tonight at Boar's Head. Got a bad hamstring, so I'm just walking it off. I live over there." He pointed to his apartment 2 blocks down. The cop turned to Gilly and said,
"You can't be yelling at people, Gilly. I've told you that.
Does Ted know you're out?"
"He's got something in that bag,"
Gilly said much softer. The cop was leading him away.
"Yeah, it's cash," said the cop. "I'm sure the guy's a bank robber, and you caught him. Good work." "But it's empty, then it's full."
"Good night, sir," the officer said over his shoulder. "Good night." And Ray, the wounded tennis player, actually limped for half a block for the benefit of other characters lurking in the darkness. When he dumped the fifth load on his bed, he found a bottle of scotch in his small liquor cabinet and poured a stiff one. He waited for 2 hours, ample time for Gilly to return to Ted, who hopefully could keep him medicated and confined for the rest of the night, and time perhaps for a shift change so a different cop would be walking the beat. 2 very long hours, in which he imagined every possible scenario involving his car in the parking garage. Theft, vandalism, fire, towed away by some misguided wrecker, everything imaginable. At 3 a.m., he emerged from his apartment wearing jeans, hiking boots, and a navy sweatshirt with Virginia across the chest. He had ditched the red tennis bag in favor of a battered leather briefcase, one that would not hold as much money, but wouldn't catch the attention of the cop either. He was armed with a steak knife stuck in his belt under the sweatshirt, ready to be withdrawn in a flash and used on the likes of Gilly or any other assailant. It was foolish and he knew it, but he wasn't himself either, and he was quite aware of that. He was dead tired, sleep-deprived for the third night in a row, just a little tipsy from 3 scotches, determined to get the money safely hidden, and scared of getting stopped again. Even the winos had given up at 3 in the morning. The downtown streets were deserted, but as he entered the parking garage, he saw something that terrified him. At the far end of the mall, passing under a street lamp, was a group of 5 or 6 black teenagers. They were moving slowly in his general direction, yelling, talking loudly, looking for trouble. It would be impossible to make a half dozen more deliveries without running into them. The final plan was created on the spot. Ray cranked the Audi and left the garage. He circled around and stopped in the street, next to the cars parked illegally on the curb, close to the door to his apartment. He killed the engine and the lights, opened the trunk, and grabbed the money. 5 minutes later, the entire fortune was upstairs where it belonged.